You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal, but everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing.
I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm very excited to be joined by former U.S. Attorney James Santel for the next hour of this fine program. And to just whet your appetite a wee bit more, we've got Dan Schaefer coming in at 5:30, giving us a little bit of that state slate. He's the creator of the Recombobulation Area. We're going to talk about all things Wisconsin and in the news. You're not going to want to go anywhere. And a bit more breaking news this afternoon, which will set up our discussion of Donald Trump's nominee to head the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office, a guy by the name of Ed Martin. Oh my goodness, problematic in oh so many ways. But here are some of the bits of breaking news just this afternoon. Apparently, unbeknownst to the White House, Pete Hegseth issued an order to stop three freight airlines operating out of Dover Air Force Base in Delaware and a U.S. base in Qatar. He stopped 11 flights, so three freight airlines, 11 total flights, loaded with artillery shells and other weaponry bound for Ukraine. It basically set off a series of panicked messages across the U.S. Transportation Command, which is called Transcom. Who halted the flights? Was it a permanent pause? Who authorized this? What was going on? The top national securities and the Pentagon and White House and State Department had no idea what had happened. Within a week, the flights were back in the air. But that order originated from Pete Hegseth. That is bananas. You're going to just stop the aid flights and you didn't get a direct okay from the president to do that? Absolutely shocking. The other bit, also sort of national security, tangentially related, but related to this bigger picture we're going to discuss in the context of Ed Martin's nomination to be a U.S. attorney in the D.C. District, is that just yesterday news came out that our intelligence agencies here in the United States had issued a memo that very clearly said that Venezuela does not direct the Tren de Agua gang, which was the entire completely made up, but that was the entire alleged basis for Donald Trump's invocation of the Alien Enemies Act to then unconstitutionally deport a bunch of people without due process. So you get this sense that no one knows what is going on, and that you do not have the right people in the right places doing these incredibly important jobs, and that the people who may be in the administration, for example, in the national security apparatus and the intelligence apparatus, and career officers in the Department of Defense are not being listened to. All of this, Mr. Santel, brings me to Ed Martin. This guy is so problematic in so many, 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 many ways, which you and I are going to discuss. But you are a former U.S. attorney, and I wanted to ask you, can you describe for people the sorts of qualifications that one needs to become a U.S. attorney, like the depth of the vetting process? Every person that I've ever talked to that has been through any of the vetting process, whether it was being vetted for an appointment by Governor Evers, an Article 3 judicial appointment, or consideration for the U.S. attorney, even fellowships in the attorney general's office, SG's office. And I went through one of those myself as a federal appeals court clerk, small potatoes to a U.S. attorney. I entered that process thinking like, oh my gosh, do I have enough cred? Do I have enough experience to do this job in the way that I know it needs to be done? Tell us more, Jim, about what is typically expected of U.S. attorney nominees.
Absolutely, Maggie. And once again, delighted, honored to be with you this afternoon to talk about all this breaking news. And it does all lead back to Ed Martin in some ways, direct and indirect, because that goes to the fundamental issues that you're also discussing when it comes to Pete Hegseth, this NSC issue as well. It has to do with both competence and communication, right? Yep. Fundamentally, every U.S. attorney, we know this well, there are 92 of them, 93 districts in the United States of America, 92 United States attorneys. And who are they? They're the chief federal law enforcement officers in the particular district. And so you and I right now are in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, Western District. There are 93 districts around the country. And each one of those people, men and women, are responsible for ensuring that the federal law is enforced. They're not the direct bosses, but they're responsible for everything from prosecution, civil litigation. You worked in this area, obviously, when you served as our counsel in Milwaukee County as well. They're responsible for ensuring that everybody is communicating, they're coordinating, and that law enforcement is directed in perhaps not the same direction, but at least has a common mission every single day. And the competence should be, of course, fundamentally, you're a lawyer. Okay. Ed Martin, I guess, crosses that or checks that box, right? But beyond that, the fact that he comes into this position with no prosecutorial experience, right? He hasn't done
Let's say that more plainly. Right. The guy has never prosecuted a criminal trial. Like, he's never stood up from gavel in to jury verdict. He has never prosecuted a single criminal case.
Never appeared before the grand jury, right?
Correct. Right. Whether that's in state or federal court, never did it.
Right.
And that's the job that he is being nominated for.
Never worked to him, as you and I have done in our careers, never worked to impanel a jury, made jury selection, a thing called motions in limine. Again, I'd love to be with you because we're both these nerdy wonks, right? Motions in limine, these motions before a trial that talk about evidence, whether it's going to come in or not. Never presumably cross-examined witnesses in those settings, presented evidence, introduced all, and just, again, the basic competence isn't there. And yes, you desperately need that. Why? Because you've got to be able to understand the challenges of all the investigative agencies with which you're working. You got to be able to understand the assistant U.S. attorneys, the lawyers around you are coming in and saying, you know what, I just got beaten up in court. I was just successful in making this argument. Opposing counsel is doing this. I've got an agency head is doing this. You've got to have that background. It's fundamental competence, as you well know well, Maggie. And this guy, again, many other problems with what which we'll talk about, I'm sure. But the fundamental through the door kind of thing, not even there. Not even there.
It is beyond the pale, this particular nomination, in a way that even, and to all the amazing people who work in the FBI, this is different than like the Cash Patel problem.
Yes, yes.
And the reason I'm going to say it is, and Jim, you can please chime in on this. There is, I can say this as a person who has led a large governmental law office.
Corporation counsel is a big deal. I will say it out loud, right?
Thank
you. A lot of responsibility in all sorts of areas.
If you cannot command at least some respect of the lawyers and the paraprofessionals that work for you, you actually can't do the job.
You can't.
They cannot like you. They can disagree with different decisions. But if they do not believe that you know what the heck you're doing, you can't do those jobs. And that sort of assessment is made before you show up on day one, and it is constantly reevaluated by every single lawyer that works for you. Lawyers, for all the jokes, there's some truth to the idea that lawyers think they're the smartest people in every room. They think they're smarter than their boss lawyer. There's just an element there. This guy, I cannot imagine, unless he has pushed out, and he has pushed out a ton of prosecutors out of the D.C. office, but unless he hires a bunch of toady lackeys that know less than he does, he's going to be staring across a table from people whom inside their heads have no respect for this guy.
Right. And every moment that they're having those discussions across those tables, they're going to be thinking, I'm soliciting the judgment and advice and counsel from someone who's never been there, never had to argue a case, never had to present these kinds of things. And it does make a big difference. Frankly, every so often in all administrations, you know this well, Maggie, there are U.S. attorneys who are plucked up. There's always those political few who are put in those positions. And yep. the wise ones, not all of them, but the wise ones say, you know what? I don't know. I'm not qualified to do this. I'm going to surround myself by all the people who do. And yes, I've got this position, and they are going to basically step in for me and tell me, basically the puppeteer, if you will, tell me what this is all about, because I shouldn't be here, fundamentally, is the problem.
And the failure to acknowledge that, right? And I'm going to speak a little bit about gender here because it comes up. It has taken me, I'm now, almost 30 years, maybe over 30 years. I don't want to do the math on the air into my career as a lawyer. And I still, anytime I'm going to be on the radio with you, Jim, in a courtroom, in a committee hearing, whatever that may be, I will still over-prepare beyond any reasonable measure, because I believe, as a young female lawyer from Wisconsin in one of the world's largest law firms based out of New York, I always felt like somebody's going to find me out, that I'm not competent enough. And so I have approached every job I've taken as a lawyer with this almost reverential sense of respect for the other lawyers that I'm working with and the job that needs to be done. Let's tease a little bit, Jim, what is also problematic about Ed Martin, because it isn't just his incredible lack of applicable experience. Here are a few other tidbits. We're going to talk about these on the flip side. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. What do we do, ladies and gentlemen, when people who are utterly incompetent, be they conservatives or liberals, be they Republicans or Democrats, fans of the MAGA movement or not, if we see someone who is objectively incompetent being appointed to these high-level positions, what do you think our response should be as Americans first, not as partisans, not as liberals and progressives and conservatives and Republicans, but as Americans, when we see this sort of incompetence occurring, what should our response be for the good of us all? 855-752-4842. Here is a little taste. Ed Martin, Donald Trump's nominee to be the U.S. attorney in the D.C. district, supported the, quote, Stop the Steal movement. So he was a big lie conspiracy theorist in 2020. He dismissed the pending January 6th cases once he was appointed to be acting U.S. attorney in D.C. He fired prosecutors who had worked on January 6th cases, though they were directed to do so by their bosses. He's launched an internal review, a witch hunt, an actual witch hunt, to scare those prosecutors into leaving their jobs, those that weren't outright fired. He has been making public comments about potential and pending cases, weighing in on them beyond the facts alleged in criminal complaints or in grand jury indictments, potentially prejudicing juries and undermining the potential of those prosecutions to bring about convictions. And I haven't even gotten to his time on Russian media and his lies about it to the U.S. Senate. We discuss all that next. And what should we do about it as thoughtful Americans, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about something that seems narrow in focus, but actually begets a much broader question. And that is, as Americans, when we see very clearly, objectively, complete incompetence in certain roles, even if somebody's trying real hard and operating in good faith, which I would respectfully suggest is not the gentleman we're talking about today. But when we see people in extraordinarily important positions in government and they simply can't get the job done, what should our response be? We're talking specifically today about Donald Trump's nominee. He's to the U.S. attorney role in the D.C. district. This guy, his name's Ed Martin. He's currently the acting U.S. attorney in that role. He's utterly incompetent. He's never tried a single criminal trial. When he described his experience, he said something about 40% of my experience is in litigation, but then was pressed and admitted he had never tried a criminal case. But his top 10 cases that he listed on his Senate questionnaire, confirmation questionnaire, are cases he's currently overseeing as the interim U.S. attorney. Like, the guy doesn't have it. He is an ultimate partisan. He was a conspiracy theorist about 2020. He's been making public comments about potential cases and current cases that are prejudicing the prosecution and may in fact require judges to dismiss them because the comments are so prejudicial. So he can't even keep his damn yap shut so as to not screw up the cases his office is handling. He's selectively prosecuted. He's a buddy with a white supremacist named Timothy Hale Cusinelli, who is also a neo-Nazi. The guy actually has a Hitler mustache. I mean, it goes on. And if not all of that, when he filled out his Senate questionnaire, he listed some, I don't know, like a handful, some 15, 16 appearances on Russian media. Okay. And it turns out, he omitted some 350 plus other appearances. Now, the difference between reporting like 20 appearances and 350 plus is huge. It would be like someone asking me, hey, have you been on the radio? And I was like, maybe a couple of two, three times on the radio. It's
I know what a microphone is, right? I've been in a studio before, maybe, right? It's not
close. So the guy's lying his butt off. The stuff he said on Russian media is insane. He's a Putin apologist. It spews a lot of Russian disinformation. Jim, tell us what to make of this.
Right.
What should we as Americans do when confronted with this level of incompetence?
Right. I think about this as not a direct answer, but I'm going to get there, I promise. If someone had come to me, maybe you as well, and said, you know what, Jim, we'd like you to be the chief of staff for the Frederick Hospital, right? And we'd both be very flattered by that, right? You'd say, gosh,
yes.
That's very nice. We've heard some good things about you, Jim. And the answer has got to be no, right? Because I am, number one, I'm not a healthcare person. I never have been. I know where the hospital is. I know what medicine is. I have no idea what that's about. And for my own integrity, but more importantly, for the integrity of the institution, I would have to say absolutely no, right? And so One of the things you can do, and it's happening and plainly prompting our discussion about this afternoon, is you need to get to members of Congress, right? Because as these people go up through the system, we talked about the mechanisms, as you said, the background checks, the questionnaires that are submitted. At some point, members of the United States Senate, the Senate Judiciary Committee, looks at these people. And typically, U.S. attorneys don't get there. Judges do. Typically, U.S. attorneys don't sit down. But this one, D.C., Southern District of Florida, Los Angeles, other places around the country, they may get there. You've got to write to those senators and say exactly what you just said, Maggie. Here's the list of concerns that I have about somebody who is appealing to you and asking to be appointed. Confirm the nomination of this person who is plainly unqualified. Don't do it, Senator. Not out of partisan or political viewpoints, but because of the importance of law enforcement in this country, right?
Well, and it's not like Donald Trump gets Ed Martin or nobody.
Right.
It's like
right.
Ed Martin or, I don't know, you know, some liberal. He can just pick a different super conservative
right.
lawyer, political operator. It's just like, please don't pick the guy who's a plant for Vladimir Putin. I'm speaking blithely there. There's no evidence of that, though he has appeared hundreds and hundreds of times.
And has apparently forgotten many of them. But,
and then failed to disclose it to the Senate, a lie by omission. I don't know. But who's never tried a criminal case? Now, I'll say this. I never tried a criminal case. But I would respectfully submit that I am way more qualified mm-hmm. to be the U.S. attorney of the D.C. district than is Ed Martin. I've tried plenty of civil cases. I've cross-examined a ton of witnesses. I understand the federal rules of evidence. These basic things. Oh, I've also run a government law office.
Right, right.
We all deserve so much better. Here's Ron Johnson's local district office phone number, everybody. Get your
right,
pencils
right.
out. 414-276 7282. That's 414-276-7282. Give Ron Johnson a call. Just tell him, please ask the president to pick someone else to be U.S. Attorney of the D.C. Circuit. You don't have to go down the partisan rabbit hole. Just say, please pick someone else to be the U.S. Attorney for the D.C. District because Ed Martin isn't qualified. That's all you got to say.
Right. And this is so important, as we're saying, too. This is not just about a name here. It is about the day-to-day decision-making, as we said before. Absent that, you truly have a breakdown inside the office and outside the office as well.
It all matters. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about some local matters with Dan Schaefer. What's going on in Wisconsin? The headlines today for our state slate is next. You're not going to want to miss it. My name is Maggie Dawn. We got Jim Santel with us. Dan Schaefer is coming up next. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We just spent some time with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel talking about the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad Donald Trump appointee to the D.C. District for U.S. Attorney. And I want to give a big shout out to Tiffany on the text line. Letton, Jim, and I both know that she has called Ron Johnson's office, both in D.C. and in Madison, to say no to Ed Martin as a nominee. Tiffany from River Falls, we love you. Thanks so much. Thanks to Cindy from Appleton. We weren't able to get to your call today. We appreciate you calling in. John from Madison, Cam from Appleton, everybody on the text line for piping up and piping in. Steve from Milwaukee, got a new listener on WISS texting in on the 920. Very, very unhappy with Ed Martin as the nominee in the D.C. circuit. But we've got some local news that we need to cover. The State Slate with Dan Schaefer is here. None other than Dan Schaefer to lead us through today's news, our political editor here at Civic Media. So, Dan, let's just jump right to it. Line item, like, let's get rid of this from the Wisconsin GOP out of Governor Evers' budget is higher taxes for rich people. They don't want to do that, do they?
Not exactly. And thank you for having me on the first place Wisconsin Broadcasters Association award-winning radio show, The Maggie Dawn Show. Wonderful to be joining you, and congratulations on the big award victory over the weekend.
Thank you so much, my friend. It is a team effort. Everybody here at Civic, including my two fine guests, both guest co-host and guest today, Dan and yourself. It takes all of us to do this, so I appreciate that. Thank you, my friend, and thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Big news in the state today. We're kind of getting to the point of the budget process where the rubber is really going to meet the road here. And so Tony Evers put forth his budget proposal earlier this year. They had listening sessions around the state over the past couple months. And now the Joint Finance Committee has scheduled an executive session for this Thursday at 1 p.m. in the Wisconsin State Capitol, when they are expected to remove dozens and dozens and dozens of items basically the entire budget proposal that Tony Evers put forward. And so you can, there's a document out there. I've shared it around on my social media, but it's about 20 page list of all of the different things that they are going to be removing from the budget. And, you know, the Wisconsin Watch did a story on, you know, some of the feedback at these listening sessions. And the top concerns there were healthcare, education, and childcare. And one in particular in childcare, because this is an issue that I've covered a bit at the Recombobulation area. We ran a piece from childcare organizer Corrine Hendrickson last week at the Recombobulation area. The Childcare Counts program, which is the funding for which is set to expire, it looks like they're going to be removing that piece from the budget as well. So the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel headline on this, from marijuana legalization to PFAS, these are all of the different items that the Republican-controlled Joint Finance Committee plans to be removing from the budget proposal in that executive session this Thursday. So it's, you know, the state budget is the biggest thing that our state government does every 2 years. And this is one of the most significant moments within that.
To the extent that I want to kick it to you, Jim, for either comment and or follow-up question, I want to read through the list of the things that they're going to take out. And I want everyone that's listening, including perhaps most importantly, our conservative friends and Republican voters, want to listen to the list of things that Republicans in this state are saying no to in our budget. And I want you to think about your most closely held values. Okay, because I truly believe the vast majority of us, we actually hold very similar values, and budgets are expressions of our values. And I want you to ask yourself honestly, if what I'm about to share with you, saying no to these things, actually reflects your values. Here we go. Increased funding for childcare, taxing the rich more, mental health services for students, lead abatement in public schools, financial aid for the University of Wisconsin system for low-income students, increased clarity in election and voting rules, including automatic voter registration, auditing health coverage denials, addressing and actually deploying the money that we have to remediate PFAS contaminations, and legalizing marijuana. Last but not least, a 48-hour waiting period for gun purchases. Please look deep into your heart and ask yourself, do your values really say no to all of those things? I would think not.
And your basic humanity, right? Your basic humanity, all of those, Maggie, Dan, across the board, they go to who we are as human beings. Again, putting aside the partisan perspectives that all of us have, and yes, that animate this process, what part of children and healthcare and education and keeping us safe? What shouldn't that be across the board? At least the headlines for everybody out there. Shouldn't that be a part of this? And Dan, I do have a follow-up question for you. So you made reference to all of the listening sessions that happened. I believe those were both for Democrats and Republicans alike. Does that get rolled into this in some way? Do the Democrats and Republicans both say, you know, we were at five different locations the period of past several weeks. This is what we heard. I heard from people concerned about child care. I heard people concerned about mental health services, about, again, waiting periods before you can purchase a weapon. And how does that process, the people actually talking to our elected representatives, how does that, if at all, get melded into this process? Or is the decision already made?
I think the hope is, of course, that this does not fall on deaf ears. I think that it does fall on deaf ears. Mm-hmm. And I think you want your government to be responsive to its constituents. And because of the gerrymandered maps for the past, 10 plus years, the Republican legislature has not had to be. But there are tighter majorities this year. There are, it's still, a fairly sizable Republican majority, but there are going to be legislators. They're going to have to answer for these votes. They have to answer for that list that you read off, Maggie, of all of those different things that they are removing from the state budget. You know, the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee is a state senator, Howard Markline. His seat is going to be up in the next election. He hasn't faced a ballot on the new maps. And so it's going to be incumbent on all of us to be watching what legislators in some of these swing districts in particular are doing to defend votes that are clearly against the priorities expressed at these listening sessions, against the priorities of the people of Wisconsin.
Here's what concerns me, Dan, is this. What we've been seeing in Congress in D.C., right, is literal silence, dead silence in committee hearing after committee hearing as Democrats introduce amendments to the budget reconciliation bill, right? So we've got this weird, of course, Wisconsin sitting at the literal center and an exemplar of what is happening on Capitol Hill. Republicans, it appears to be enforced silence and enforced required unanimity. There is no breaking of ranks. Are we looking down the barrel of similar party line enforcement here? Or do you think because the districts are closer, you actually might see some movement? Because a number of those congressional, especially on the House side, Republicans, a few of them are in purple districts. They're going to face damnedly hard re-election races, and it doesn't seem to be moving the needle in D.C. at all. What do you portend here?
You know, in the Assembly in particular, I think Robin Voss has had a pretty much an iron grip on the caucus there. They have very much voted in line with what his priorities have been as Assembly Speaker. He's the longest serving Assembly Speaker in state history. And, you know, he has stayed in that position for a reason. But I do think it's, you know, there are going to be swing votes on the budget on a certain measures. There's seats in Milwaukee County or the Fox Valley or southwestern Wisconsin, some of these swingier regions in the state, in this purple state that we live in, that maybe, you know, voted for Donald Trump in the fall and voted for Susan Crawford in the spring, right? So there's going to be some accountability that can be brought to these. But I think I would look to the Senate in particular. The Democrats have a real chance of flipping the Senate in the 2026 election. And some of these close districts, like I mentioned, Markline's seat, there's one in the western suburbs around Milwaukee, another in kind of Racine County and southern Milwaukee County as well. So some of these districts, I think it's going to be really important to hold these legislators accountable, because voters can actually do that because we don't have gerrymandered maps anymore.
You and I have had this conversation innumerable times. I consistently try to explain to people gerrymandering even hurts your own team, because the elected officials don't have to care about what you want them to do because it's a gimme for them, right? Like, that's not good for anybody. Folks, if you're looking for Ron Johnson's Senate office numbers, don't worry. They'll be in the show notes for today. You can find those at civicmedia.us. His Madison office number is 608-240-9629. That's 608-240-9629. Well, these upcoming Senate elections aren't the only elections and election news that has been getting made as of late. Dan, we've got another Republican throwing his hat in the ring for the governor's race and, frankly, trotting out the same old playbook. Tell us more, Dan.
Yeah, Washington County Executive Josh Shulman is the first declared Republican who is running for governor in 2026. We had about a month where nobody was campaigning in Wisconsin, so of course we got to get back to it. That's as much of a break as we're going to get in this state.
The
right?
Signs came down just briefly, and now apparently they're going to go back up. Right?
Put it back up.
And now right back up. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I took note of in Shulman's announcement was that he was, you know, really talking about, you know, loving your neighbor and getting back to a place in Wisconsin where you love your neighbor. Well, he is somebody who has been especially divisive in recent years because he has been, like many Wow County Republicans, if just bashing Milwaukee to raise his profile. So he did this. I don't know if you remember the whole Cracker Barrel incident that happened, the little war of words between Shulman and Milwaukee County, as a mayor of Milwaukee, Cavalier Johnson. And not only that, but, you know, the Washington County executive here made it a real priority to put a measure to referendum in his county, to called it this anti-crime program. He really played it up. This was in the fall of 22, a lot of backlash to the defund the police type of rhetoric that you had heard in the years prior. And even though he is the county executive of a county that votes like 70 to 80% Republican, was not able to get a measure that brought greater funding to the sheriff's department in that county passed. He failed in that effort after, you know, really trumpeting it for a long time. So it's not really a strong record to run on. And it's just the same typical city versus suburb divisive politics that we've seen from Wow County Republicans for a long time.
Yeah, it's a sad place when if you're running on love thy neighbor, except for that neighbor, it doesn't really work so well. Jim
and Dan, again, we've got a limited period of time. I know before the next break, you look at that. You're the political guy here on Civic Media. You think about the strategy. What kind of recommendations is being given by his people? And shouldn't that recommendation, to your good point, be a whole lot more centrist and not at these extremes, hoping to gather in those larger votes that maybe in the past you've not gotten?
It doesn't seem like the way he's starting things out.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
Watch this space, folks. We'll have more Dan Schaefer with us next week. Thanks so much, Dan. We always appreciate your insights on the State Slate with Dan Schaefer, creator of the Recombobulation. Come back with Jim and I for our final closing thoughts on this Tuesday afternoon on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Can't believe we're here already. Time flies when we're talking news and having some great discussions, which we're all about here at Civic Media. My thanks to Dan Schaefer, who joined me, as well as Jeremy Janine, who joined me in my first hour, and my fine guest sitting in a co-host guest chair with me, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Before we get to our closing thoughts for the day, got to tell you all, I have got something very special for you tomorrow. I am happy to announce that historian Heather Cox Richardson is returning to the Maggie Dawn Show. She is with me for the entire first hour tomorrow. We're going to talk about a wide variety of issues. You're not going to want to miss it, including corruption, Donald Trump's ridiculous tariffs, some of the history of tariffs, and so much more. Please mark your calendars. Heather Cox Richardson tomorrow at 4 p.m. If you haven't heard of Professor Richardson before, she is the number one Substack. It's Letters from an American. I am a subscriber. I read it every day. She helps put the current chaos into historical context, which I think helps make us all smarter and better able to understand what's happening today. And on Thursday, we also have a very special installment of the Maggie Dawn Show. It is going to be all about cyber or internet threats or online threats. And we are coming at it from two vantage points. We're going to talk about it on our family's basis, on an individual basis. Recent reporting in the Journal Sentinel has shared the tragic case of a teenager who was the victim of sextortion and took his life. His father is going to be joining us. There's currently legislation that has been proposed here in the state of Wisconsin to address those risks. That's going to be the first hour of our program. We're then going to pivot in the second hour of our program and talk to a cybersecurity expert. We're going to talk about our national security interests, our grid, our energy grid. We'll talk about election systems, all that coming up on Thursday, an entirely dedicated program all on cyber threats and cybersecurity. Please mark your calendars. Don't miss that. Some really special Maggie Dawn shows coming up in the next couple of days. But Jim, I wanted to round out this afternoon's show by giving you the opportunity, and then I'll finish it up, to acknowledge teachers and other people who have served as teachers in your lifetime, as it is Teacher Appreciation Day. Please, everybody, say thank you to your teachers, your children's teachers, your own teachers. Jim, anybody that you'd like to lift up, especially today?
Many, many of them. I still think, Maggie, about one of my very, very favorite teachers in high school. The third period, I had her for French, and in the afternoon, it was English and American literature. And to this day, I can hear her talking in my head in a good way, a very good way, about the messages that come from language and from words, things that you and I talk about a lot, not only on this broadcast, but in other venues. She invested in me that notion of communication that, again, we talked about before, the lack of it right now, apparently, inside our government. She invested in me in this notion that through words and through articulation, written and spoken, it's not too much to say you can change the world. You can certainly change individuals. You can change their perspectives to the good. And you can engage in the debate that you have so often advocated for. That's what our educators should be all about, opening up our minds and telling us, by exposing us to all kinds of things across the board, we are better people when we hear from all different perspectives. We value those, we weigh them, we sift them, and in the end, we make our decisions. That's what education is about. That's what Barbara McCann did for me many, 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 many years ago. The French language, the English language, American literature. I am so forever thankful.
I want to start by acknowledging our first teachers, our parents, as well as every parent who really invests their time, effort, love, and energy in their child's education, including that huge universe of homeschooling parents out there. My senior producer, Jamie, I'm looking right at you, my friend. I really appreciate all the love and education and learning and critical thinking that you share with your amazing sons. I was given a love of learning early. It has never stopped. And it is a humble endeavor at its base to continue to want to know more, to not assume that you have learned all, and to be open to challenging perspectives, new information, a new view on history that you thought you knew well. This is the human project of education, hopefully for each and every one of us, a lifelong one. But as we each sit here, or as you may be driving or at home, going about your afternoon chores, driving home from work, I know that there is one particular instructor or teacher, professor, high school, middle school, grade school, perhaps in your catechism classes, who knows, that was particularly inspirational for you, and how grateful you were that they took the time to care for you and for your development. Please, if you can, and you know them, reach out to them and say thank you. They will appreciate it. And if you can't, just offer up some thanks to those amazing influences in each of our lives. I'm going to take what I call show host liberty, and I'm going to name check a few of my amazing teachers that I had first at St. Emilion's in preschool, for crying out loud. Right. I remember some of my preschool teachers taught me how to read very early on at 81st Street School, at St. Pius the 10th grade school, Rufus King High School for the College Bound, Marquette University, and the University of Wisconsin Law School. Mrs. Fitzwater taught me how to read at 81st Street School. Miss Updegraff, Miss Anne Marie Griesmeyer, Miss Worley, Miss Jan Smith, Miss Sharon Dorshing, all at St. Pius the 10th, Miss Jones, Miss Connie Wood, Dr. Castillo, Dr. Wanda Bussey, Miss Shirley Minga, and a whole host of others at Rufus King High School for the College Bound. And especially huge thank you to Dr. Joe Daniels, Dr. Farouk Narzad, Dr. Clifton Spargo, Dr. Peter Tamanoff, and so many others at Marquette University, and to each and every one of my amazing professors at the University of Wisconsin Law School. I'm only here because of each and every one of you. Thank you. You are appreciated. And thanks to you, Jim, and to each one of you for listening this afternoon. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for public education and our amazing teachers. Happy Teacher Appreciation Day, everybody.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.